Yesterday, President Trump said the nation was one step closer to liberation from what he calls the Obamacare nightmare. This hour, will the GOP find enough support? Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, joined this hour by political scientists Jim McCormick and Dave Anderson of Iowa State University. We'll also talk about Trump's ban on transgender people in the military, the president's attacks on his attorney general, and more on the Russia probe. And we'll ask about a Wisconsin gerrymandering challenge to come before the U.S. Supreme Court. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg calls it the most important case of the next term. Discussion. First, this hour's news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled, and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Joining us out of our Ames studio, a dynamic duo, if there ever was one, Dave Anderson is with us, Assistant Professor of Politics at Iowa State University, and Jim McCormick, Professor of Politics at ISU. Jim and Dave, a big welcome to you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ben.
We've got plenty to talk about, as we typically do and have for months now on Politics Wednesday. A little later in the program, we'll pick up on the latest developments in the Russia probe, the also overhaul in the White House of the communications area with someone named, nicknamed the Mooch, Anthony Scaramucci, tapped for the new role of for the new communications director at the White House. We'll talk about that a little bit later. In a few minutes, the Republicans' continued efforts to come up with a health care bill that garners enough support from the Senate Republicans. But first, top of the political news this morning, President Trump tweeting he will ban transgender people from serving in the military in any capacity, rolling back an Obama administration decision that would have allowed them to serve. Here's a couple of his tweets put together. After consultation with my generals and military experts, please be advised that the United States government will not accept or allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail. We want to reach out to our listeners on this or any of the other political topics today to join our discussion with your questions and comments. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, if that is more to your liking. Before I have you react, let me add here that our two senators have reacted. Senator Ernst, a 20-year veteran of the military, also member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, breaking with the president this morning, telling the Des Moines Register that anyone qualified should be allowed to serve. She also said that the government should not pay for gender reassignment as it does now under the Obama-era policy currently in effect. Senator Charles Grassley, meanwhile, declining to take a position on the new policy. He offered deference to Ernst's view as a veteran and member of the Armed Services Committee. Jim, let me turn to you. Thoughts on this latest tweet that has everybody talking?
Well, there's been already objection, not only from Senator Ernst, as you quoted there, but also Senator McCain has raised some of the same arguments. I think the issue is whether the Congress would take it up, and my sense is that the Congress would not take this issue up. I mean, there is a Defense Authorization Act that is currently under consideration, and one of the reasons why Senator McCain came back from Arizona to lead that discussion on the floor. But I would be very surprised if the Senate added that as one of the conditionalities.
So the president, as would seem to be indicated, he cannot, as his tweet indicates, simply declare it to be so?
Well, I mean, he certainly can declare it to be so, in terms of the expander-in-chief clause. He has that in terms of the of the military here. But the Congress, in its wisdom, it could make a change in that. I'm just suggesting that they're unlikely to do that.
Mm, okay. Your thoughts, Dave?
I'm kind of surprised that President Trump chose this moment to raise the issue. This is not something that is considered critical to the United States military right now. It's more of a political issue. And today especially, we have plenty of political issues to talk about. And I would have expected President Trump to wait to throw this out there somewhere farther down the line.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's move on to the health care bill that the Republicans are trying to craft and get support for in the Senate. Yesterday, a big day for that. Here's Senator John McCain returning to Washington after disclosing his brain cancer diagnosis last week. Here he is speaking on the Senate floor after casting a critical vote to proceed on debate on the Senate's Affordable Care Act repeal legislation.
We're getting nothing done, my friends. We're getting nothing done. And all we've really done this year is confirm Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. Our health care insurance system is a mess. We all know it, those who support Obamacare and those who oppose it. Something has to be done. We Republicans have looked for a way to end it and replace it with something else without paying a terrible political price. We haven't found it yet, and I'm not sure we will. All we've managed to do is make more popular a policy that wasn't very popular when we started trying to get rid of it. I voted for the motion to proceed to allow debate to continue and amendments to be offered. I will not vote for this bill as it is today.
Senator John McCain emphatic yesterday, returning to Washington after that brain cancer diagnosis last week. We're back with a straight shooter, as he has always been known, John McCain. Dave Anderson, a remarkable speech. We only heard less than a minute of it there, but really putting a cap on some things that that have been a problem in Washington for a long time.
Sure. This is John McCain at his finest. I think we're likely to see him leave the Senate within a year, and he will go down as maybe this generation's most influential senator. And it's because he has had the courage to stand up not just to other senators, but to his party and say, hey, you know, we've all been elected here to do a job for the American people, and we're not doing it. He's really put his neck out a number of times and tried to make the Senate more functional and more capable of doing its job. And I think the speech yesterday is one that we will go back and listen to for years to come, because it was just magnificent.
Mm-hmm. Jim McCormick, similarly impressed with John McCain yesterday? And
absolutely.
If so,
I mean, yeah. His call for a bipartisanship, hopefully will be heard. But I'm frankly skeptical that, given the political environment that we're in, that will be one of his legacies of trying to secure bipartisanship. I regret that, but I think that's probably the likely outcome.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the health care bill, where it is now after yesterday. The Washington Post reporting that it's looking like the GOP legislation to revamp Obamacare will undergo a pretty major weight loss program before all is said and done. They're writing, expectations are building that Senate leaders will ultimately present Republicans with a so-called skinny bill after more aggressive measures fail in the floor debate over the next few days. Jim, is that what you see happening? This is the skinny repeal. And to put it simply, the skinny repeal, get rid of the unpopular parts of the ACA, leave intact all of the ACA's insurance subsidies, the popular parts for low-income Americans, its expansion of Medicaid, its requirements for more expansive coverage, and its protections for people, say, with pre-existing conditions. Is that the path you're seeing here?
I really do think that is the path. I think what the Senate is really desperate to do is to pass some legislation that will get it to conference. And then, I think the sort of the long view is that the conference will probably just simply make some adjustments in the ACA, in the Obamacare package, and it'll come back to the Senate with those, and maybe it's like simply declaring victory on the part of the Senate.
Mm-hmm. After 7 years of repeal,
that's right.
Repeal and replace. Dave Anderson, would the Republican Party's, let's say, right wing support a bill that only sort of gets rid of a sliver of the Affordable Care Act?
It's going to be really hard to get that through some of the conservatives in the party's right wing. And that's the Republican Party's problem right now. They all agree that they want to get rid of Obamacare and do something better, but they can't seem to agree on what would be better. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have a series of votes and see if they can come to agreement on anything.
So yesterday, explain this a little to us, Dave. Yesterday we had the vote to proceed to on debate, but then later in the day, the outright repeal failed pretty miserably, right?
Yes, and this is where I think the American public really begins to disdain Congress, because it's a complicated system. Yesterday they held a vote to allow them to discuss the issue, and they voted to begin discussing the issue, but as soon as they started voting on proposals for actual legislation, the lack of agreement showed loud and clear. The Republican Party really doesn't have an answer yet. They have a number of proposals, but these proposals have not been vetted. They haven't been subject to hearings. They haven't been subject to public scrutiny yet. But the party seems determined to try to follow through on a campaign promise to get rid of Obamacare by just seeing what they can agree to vote on.
Okay, on a story that changes by the day, we'll keep our eyes on that and move on to this curious attack of the president on Attorney General Jeff Sessions, his attorney general. Analysts saying he appears to be putting pressure on the attorney general to quit by repeatedly criticizing him on Twitter and in interviews. Here's some of that. Yesterday, during a joint news conference, happened to be with the Lebanese prime minister, President Trump announcing he was disappointed in actions taken by Attorney General Jeff Sessions, expressing regret for appointing the former senator.
I am disappointed in the attorney general. He should not have recused himself almost immediately after he took office. And if he was going to recuse himself, he should have told me prior to taking office, and I would have quite simply pick somebody else. So I think that's a bad thing, not for the president, but for the presidency. I think it's unfair to the presidency, and that's the way I feel. Thank you.
Okay, the president speaking yesterday. Jim McCormick, what do you make of Donald Trump's attacks on who is one of his most loyal supporters during the campaign, Jeff Sessions?
It's incredibly puzzling why he would engage in this rather continuous attack. He may have expressed in his New York Times interview of last week his dissatisfaction, but situation continues on, it seems to me, of attacking the attorney general. And I can't quite fathom what the long-term gain here is, because even if Sessions were to resign, the problem of getting somebody approved in the U.S. Senate right now that would be to Trump's liking is really very small. And the political costs within the country and across party lines are substantial. So I'm not sure what this is, except maybe personal pique on the part of Trump with Sessions. And maybe there is this kind of some kind of a visceral dislike between the two.
Mm-hmm. Do you see, Dave, unlikely that the president will fire Sessions?
Well, I feel like it's almost building to the inevitability of the attorney general having to either step aside or be fired. When the president expresses displeasure with somebody who serves in the cabinet, that usually indicates that person's days are numbered in office. It just seems rather bizarre for this to happen 6 months into the term, without really the agenda having been worked on substantively, and over an issue that Sessions could not have known that he would be asked to recuse himself from an investigation that didn't exist yet when he was given the position. Mm. It is really just a bizarre turn of events that is becoming somewhat typical for this administration. The bizarre is becoming normal.
Yeah, and the president doesn't even have support within his own party, within the Congress. There were a number of senators yesterday that came out in support of Sessions and sort of told him basically to hang on. So I don't know where this is heading. I can't fathom, except maybe that he wants, although Sessions has been very good in terms of executing some of the agenda that the Trump administration has desired, but maybe wants him to do more. Apparently, there's supposed to be an announcement today of taking on some leaking that has occurred within the intelligence community. Maybe that will be a kind of a turning point for the president to say something positive about the attorney general.
Okay, well, this morning on Morning Edition, it was interesting. Here's another view here. Morning Edition had on former House Speaker Newt Gingrich telling Rachel Martin that President Trump is right to be troubled that Attorney General Jeff Sessions recused himself from the Justice Department's investigation into Russian collusion in the 2016 election. Let's listen to his reasoning of Newt Gingrich.
The Justice Department is a extraordinarily left-wing institution. 97% of its donations went to Hillary Clinton. It has an embedded bureaucracy, which was captured very, very well by Sidney Powell in her book, License to Lie. And I think that he's deeply troubled by the entire way that both Comey and Mueller have operated and the degree to which the Attorney General has not exercised any authority over that.
Okay, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich in conversation with Rachel Martin this morning on Morning Edition. Dave Anderson, is that what it's at? It's that he sees, the president sees the Justice Department as a left-wing institution.
Well, President Trump seems to believe that anybody who does not fall in lockstep behind him is a left-wing institution. And maybe that's what's happening. But to turn against your own attorney general over this seems very bizarre. I mean, Senator Sessions was one of the first people to endorse Trump during the campaign. He defended Trump numerous times. He is about as strong a political ally as President Trump has. And to say that he's not being loyal enough and that he would prefer to pick somebody else, well, the first thing I'd have to do is say, well, who do you have in mind? Because the list of potential attorney generals is not long. And I don't think there are any names on that list who are more loyal than Jeff Sessions has been.
Mm-hmm. Jim McCormick and Dave, let's listen to this, too. This is another interpretation. Last week, Friday, on the PBS NewsHour, an interesting comment, as often, from David Brooks, the New York Times columnist. You mentioned a few minutes ago this really interesting, some call it strange, New York Times interview that the president gave. Well, David Brooks went on PBS last Friday talking about the president's interview with the New York Times. This is something that sort of he forecast a bit of what's to come. See if you agree with this. David Brooks.
Donald Trump, give him credit. He's completely transparent. He basically said in that interview, my corruption can be found in my tax returns. If you look into my tax returns, I will fire you. He transmits everything that he's thinking out in public in an incredibly transparent way. So we're looking at the fact where Bob Mueller will probably go to the tax returns. Donald Trump will probably fire Bob Mueller. And then we'll be in some sort of constitutional crisis. And it's all telegraphed right there out in the open.
Okay. So, Dave, what do you think there of this prognostication by David Brooks?
I think it is accurate. It seems like President Trump has been telegraphing his moves. And for a lot of people, I think this is somewhat refreshing that Donald Trump is not a politician. He is not careful with his speech. He does not tailor his words towards his audience. He says whatever is on his mind at the moment. And in some cases, it seems like he's almost indicting himself and saying, I am both guilty of potential corruption and I will defend myself, even if it means breaking the law or the rules of ethics.
Right. And we had this talk, Jim McCormick, what did you make this week of the talk of a pardoning, the president tweeting about pardoning?
Well, I think the president does have the power to pardon. I mean, it's constitutionally mandated and so on.
But
maybe bringing it up is, if in fact David Brooks is right that the truth lies in the tax returns, maybe that's what the president is aiming at in terms of this referencing to pardoning. I happened to be around at the time of the Watergate firing, and it was a pretty messy, unsatisfying kind of environment. I hope we don't go in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Any other comparisons you're seeing? I mean, the way this is rolling out so quickly, I don't know if you remember that aspect of it, Jim, from the Watergate days. The revelations, for instance, the evolving story. We had Well, Donald Trump has routinely called the Russia story fake news, a witch hunt. We know that. But asked in February if anyone in his campaign had contact with Russia during the election, Trump first said, well, General Flynn was obviously dealing with Russia. That's one person. Asked if that contact happened to be during the election. Trump responding, no, nobody I know of. He went on to say, I have nothing to do with Russia. To the best of my knowledge, no person that I deal with does. And then it turns out that Jared Kushner, Donald Trump Jr., Attorney General Jeff Sessions, all have confirmed on the record that they had Russia meetings during the campaign, despite all these denials. Jim, is that what you remember from decades ago, this sort of unraveling?
Well, that was part of it, wasn't it? I mean, Woodward and Bernstein, you know, had these kind of stories day after day about things that were not accurate by the Nixon administration, and of course the denials that the Nixon administration put forward on a kind of a regular basis. You know, there's been this whole litany of the number of untruths, I guess, but to be polite about it, or to use a euphemism here, that the administration and the president has engaged in. And this is coming back to haunt him, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm. We have a couple minutes before the break. Talk a little bit of your thoughts, Dave, you first, on Jared Kushner's testimony. Now, this took place behind closed doors this week. What do you take away from all the reaction, I guess, of officials coming away from the Kushner testimony?
Well, I think the Kushner testimony stands out to me because for the first time, the Trump administration did what they should have been doing from day one when there are questions.
And we're back midstream in this Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, just a program note for tomorrow, we're talking about the legislature cutting funding to Iowa's community colleges by $3 million. Tomorrow on this program, I'll talk with three community college presidents in Iowa about how they're dealing with that reduced funding. The presidents of Kirkwood, DMAC, and Northeast Iowa Community College tomorrow on River to River. Today, so glad to have Jim McCormick and Dave Anderson, our political analysts from Iowa State University, in our AIM studio. We'd love to have you join our conversation as we talk about the latest in the Russia probe, also the president's attacks on his attorney general, and the skinny, so-called skinny repeal of Obamacare. Senate Republicans seem to be heading toward. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Let's take a call from Rich in Waverly. Hi, Rich.
Yes, hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for my call. Just one comment I'd like to make about Senator McCain's vote on the Affordable Health Care repeal, and that is that the hypocrisy the gentleman has shown in regards to what our taxpaying dollars pay for his Cadillac plan, to pay for his tumors, surgery, and yet he voted, and now 30 million people and are going to lose their health care because of that. And that's sad, and I really, really believe this is going to backfire on the Republican Party in the near future. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for that call. To be clear, the Republican senator from Arizona, McCain, did not say he would vote for the bill as it is today. He voted to continue to allow debate and amendments to be offered. So it was a procedural step, but we get the point. Your perspective, Rich, from Waverly. Clinton emailing, the attacks on Trump's earliest supporter and strongest ally are not bizarre. This person writes, it points towards the money laundering with Russia. There is total smoke obscuring a huge fire, according to one of our listeners. I can't tell if it's a name Clinton or an email from Clinton, Iowa. Thanks for that. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Before we move on from the Russia investigation, Jim or Dave, either of you, a story with so many branches, subplots, twists and turns, developments by the day. Anything we haven't mentioned that caught your eye in the latest few days?
The only thing that keeps catching my attention is that this is such a large story with so many moving parts that it's really hard to remember all the evidence and all the accusations that are flying around. There's almost no discussion anymore of Michael Flynn, who lost his position in the administration. There's just so much conjecture about if the campaign was working with Russia in any way, shape, or form. And bizarrely, very little of this would actually be illegal. It's not illegal to talk to a member of a foreign government, even if you're in the middle of a campaign.
It is a problem to receive something of value, right? That's
yes.
What's being discussed.
If Vladimir Putin was sending over a $1 million check to the Trump campaign, that would be illegal. But there's been no accusation of this. And it just kind of goes back to this idea that if the administration had just answered honestly about everything and said, yes, we had some communications. Yes, we had the sense that the Russian government would have preferred us to win. And hey, we didn't argue against them on that. The story dies quickly and there's less to talk about. It is the exact same thing that happened with the Watergate scandal, that it wasn't the crime that brought down the presidency. It was the cover up.
Okay. Jim, I wanted to get your opinion in particular about the sanctions imposed this week by the House of Representatives. Russia now warning it's edging closer to retaliation against our government after the U.S. House backing a new sanctions bill on Moscow. That was yesterday, an overwhelming vote, bipartisan, to impose new sanctions on Moscow and force Donald Trump to obtain lawmakers' permission before easing any of these punitive measures on Russia. What are the implications you see here?
Well, first of all, this is an effort really by Congress to assume some foreign policy responsibilities. I took a look at the bill this morning and the provision that talked about what the Congress can actually do. And to lift these sanctions by the president, he would have to give a 30-day kind of period for congressional review. And the Congress could enact a joint resolution of disapproval. And there are certain restrictions that it could not be sort of bottled up and so on. So this is a fairly dramatic, because most foreign policy legislation, even when the Congress supposedly takes a tough stand, they usually have what I call an escape clause. It's a statement that president, if he declares this in the national interest of the United States, he can waive the restrictions that the Congress has imposed. This has been occurred on arms sales. This occurs on foreign assistance. So this legislation is really different in the sense that it has this, I think, a much tighter kind of control. And particularly if you keep in mind that the legislation both in the Senate and in the House was passed by overwhelming majorities, that means, in effect, they're veto-proof. Because of the joint resolution, mm-hmm. the president could obviously veto congressional action. But because of the large majority in both the House and the Senate, I think that's unlikely. So in this sense, it's a tougher kind of control. And for that reason, it makes no sense for Trump to veto it, because he'd be overridden in a if he vetoes this bill, he'd be overridden.
Nevertheless, NPR reporting conflicting opinions from the spokespeople for the president, some saying, well, he's going to think about this, others saying he's on board with these new sanctions. So something not quite clear there.
I think cooler heads will win out. Maybe I'm wrong, but you know, and he'll probably sign it. And as do presidents say, they're going to sign this and then issue what's called a presidential signing statement, in which they object to what is really in the bill, but they've gone ahead begrudgingly and signed it.
Let's talk about another development. Wall Street financier Anthony Scaramucci, evidently called by his friends as a nickname, the Mooch, has been tapped for the role of new communications director for the White House. Let's hear a little bit of the new White House communications director telling Fox News here this morning that while it would be impossible to eliminate all the leaks, he vowed to crack down on leaks from senior officials coming out of the White House.
And listen, we have to crack down on leaks on a number of different fronts. There seems to be some holdovers, political holdovers from the Obama administration that are not helping. I have the full responsibility here in the comms shop, which I do believe will get corrected shortly. And so, yes, I do think that the leaks are a problem. People are suggesting I'm going to try to get the leaks down to zero. That is absolutely impossible in Washington. I'm learning a little bit about this town. But what I do want to have happen is that people that report to me, if there are senior people inside the administration that are trying to get them to leak information on each other, we're getting that to stop right now.
Scaramucci saying that he's also prepared to fire everybody to stop unauthorized information coming from the press office. Dave Anderson, well, I guess so many things rolled up here. The exit of Sean Spicer, the entrance of Anthony Scaramucci, and the issue of leaks.
Yes. There is so much to talk about. We could spend an entire hour on this subject. But it's going to be very interesting moving forward, seeing how Scaramucci adapts to this job. The communications director in the White House is arguably the most difficult PR job in the world. And Anthony Scaramucci has no communications experience. He is a guy who has defended Trump voraciously on TV before, but he doesn't understand how the media works, how communications work. He's never crafted communications strategy. And this is a great test of Donald Trump's belief in loyalty. He believes that Scaramucci's loyalty to him will ultimately lead him to do a good job because he's a competent guy and he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about this idea that Anthony Scaramucci is cut more of the same cloth that of the same cloth that Donald Trump is, as opposed to Sean Spicer, who was not? What do you think of that, Jim?
Well, I think that Scaramucci is really going to overshadow rather dramatically Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I think that's one of the other things that these kind of changes. So the press secretary is going to be replaced by the communications director here. And, you know, Scaramucci is cut from the same cloth as President Trump, it seems to me, in terms of being outspoken and no holes barred, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the president. And, of course, communications directors and White House spokespeople have to interpret, walk back in some cases what the president says. Clarify is a key word that's often used by press spokespeople. Two notable outings for the president earlier this week. We had a campaign-style rally in Ohio last night, during which the president insisted that, in his words, except for the late, great Abraham Lincoln, he could easily act more presidential than any other president in history. Earlier this week, Monday, Donald Trump addressing thousands of Boy Scouts at the National Scout Jamboree. This was in West Virginia. Well, he turned it into a political speech. He opened his address, though, stating he planned to leave politics out of his speech.
Tonight, we put aside all of the policy fights in Washington, D.C. you've been hearing about with the fake news and all of that. We're going to put that aside. And instead, we're going to talk about success, about how all of you amazing young scouts can achieve your dreams, what to think of, what I've been thinking about. You want to achieve your dreams? I said, who the hell wants to speak about politics when I'm in front of the Boy Scouts, right?
Well, after applauding the Boy Scouts and their accomplishments, the president's speech shifted and his language began to sound, of course, more like a campaign rally than an address for this nonpartisan organization of youth.
You know, my opponent didn't work hard there because she was told she was going to win Michigan. And I said, well, wait a minute. The car industry is moving to Mexico. Why is she going to move? She's there. Why are they allowing it to move? And by the way, do you see those car industry? Do you see what's happening? How they're coming back to Michigan. They're coming back to Ohio. They're starting to peel back in. And we'd go to Wisconsin. Now, Wisconsin hadn't been won in many, many years by a Republican. But we'd go to Wisconsin, and we had tremendous crowds. And I'd leave these massive crowds. I'd say, why are we going to lose this state? The polls, that's also fake news. They're fake polls. But the polls are saying, but we won Wisconsin.
Okay, a little bit of the president on Monday. Before a group of Boy Scouts taking swipes at, you heard there, Hillary Clinton, President Obama as well. We didn't hear that bragging again about the election victory. Also, we didn't hear this part, inexplicably thanking the Scouts for their votes. Jim McCormick, What did you take away from listening to that speech?
Wow, campaign rallies. That's basically what it is on the president. I guess, you know, his spokespeople say that these kind of rallies energize him. But it really is sort of not consistent with the traditional presidency. Let me put it that way.
It's really in yet another way, yes.
It's really an unconventional presidency in terms of, you know, speaking to the Boy Scouts. I mean, I can understand maybe in Ohio yesterday, you know, it was in fact kind of rejuvenate him with the campaign rally. But speaking to the Boy Scouts in terms of the partisanship seems really, frankly, out of place in my judgment.
Dave?
I totally agree. Another example of this just being not cut in the same cloth as every other president we've had previously. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump became president saying he was going to change the institution. This is another example of him doing so. And we will all have to sit down and wait and see whether the next president, whether it's in 4 years or 8 years, changes the presidency back or tries to.
Mm-hmm. In the last few minutes, as I mentioned at the outset, I wanted to get your views on gerrymandering, developments there that have been sidelined by a lot of the other things in the focus of politics, national politics. But it turns out former President Obama, other leading Democrats making their first moves this month on a push to change how states draw congressional districts. Obama returning to politics. He was a headliner of a July 13th fundraiser for a Democratic group that plans to fight for what it sees as more equitable congressional and state legislative districts after the 2020 census. We have also a voter rights groups not waiting for 2020, launching legal challenges to strike down congressional maps in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Maryland. This is ahead of the 2018 elections. Some of the lawsuits championing a new mathematical approach to proving partisan gerrymandering that will be tested in the Supreme Court this fall. The Wisconsin case that we've been hearing about, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg calling it the most important case of the next term, Gill v. Whitford. Jim McCormick, are you watching this? What if the Supreme Court requires that states account not just for racial but also political balance when they redraw congressional maps?
Well, I think, I haven't been watching as probably as much as I should. I'm glad that you brought it to our attention or to my attention. I think that will be very tricky, it seems to me, taking into account the, political considerations. You know, if you look at the number of states now that do it through a legislative process, you know, it's a preponderance of states. I think it's 37 in all that use state legislatures to make this decision. And so that already incorporates it into the political process. Now, one of the moves that could be made, of course, is to use, like Iowa does actually, is to have a commission that makes a recommendation on redrawing boundary lines for congressional districts. And presumably they could do the same in terms of state legislative districts.
Right. So
well.
Iowa is really a standout, a model for
it. Is. There's only six or seven states that are in that category that use these kind of advisory councils. Now, the state legislature has the ultimate authority to make the decision, but it really is politically disadvantageous for the legislature to kind of challenge these commissions very severely. You know, the Wisconsin case is a case where the Republicans control the state legislature in Wisconsin and was able to redraw some of the state boundary lines for the legislative districts within Wisconsin, and that's sort of the basis of it. But it'll be interesting to see how far the Supreme Court goes, or even some of the district court goes, in terms of addressing this, because they have done this, of course, in terms of population going back to Baker versus Carr back in the 1960s. But whether they'll get into this political thicket or not, I think it remains to be seen.
Dave, have you been watching any of these gerrymandering developments?
Yes, and I actually think that it's an understatement to say this may be the most important case of the year.
Understatement.
This could be one of those Supreme Court cases that we talk about for a generation.
Mm-hmm.
if you look at the United States right now, probably the biggest problem we face domestically is partisanship. It's polarization. It's the idea that our political leaders don't talk to each other if they're from different parties. And one of the causes of this is gerrymandering, because it creates a lot of unsafe safe districts that the party in power stays in power, and they don't need to talk to the other party. And that poisons the well of politics. Mm-hmm. And in the states where you have a better way of drawing a map, you tend to have better politics. Iowa is known for having kind of good politics. The parties here are not at each other's throat consistently like you see in other states. I've only been in Iowa, this is my fifth year, and I can tell you, coming from New Jersey, politics is very different there, and they have a wonky system of doing a partisan map.
Here's one of the states that these groups that are launching these legal challenges bring out, the case of Pennsylvania. Evidently, Democratic candidates in Pennsylvania garnered as much as 51% of the votes in the past three elections. This is all together. Pennsylvania has 18 seats. Yet in each of the last three elections, even though 51%, as much as 51% of the votes in the past three elections, they have five of the 18 seats, the Democrats. So I guess this is one of the places where perhaps you could point to most definitely, probably, Dave?
Absolutely. Pennsylvania is an outlier in this. They have an extreme problem where if you look at the number of Democratic votes that the state has compared to the number of Democratic representatives the state has, there's a massive imbalance. Some of this is gerrymandering, but another problem that really the courts can't address is self-selection. Democrats, liberals tend to move in urban areas. And conservatives and Republicans tend to move towards rural areas. And gerrymandering just exacerbates that problem.
Mm-hmm. With the makeup of the court. Yeah, Jim, go ahead.
I just wanted to throw in a little bit of a monkey wrench here. Is this another area where we want the courts to decide the direction of politics?
Yes. I think this is exactly an area where the courts should say, you know, you should play by a fair set of rules. When one party controls the legislature